On BBS Radio, BBS Late Night Talk Radio. This is your host, DJ. And the song that you just heard, we don't know how long ago or if you did, is called The Welcome Song, and we are welcoming you to the show. The Welcome Song is off a recently released CD by our special guest tonight, Jenny Lozon, and the title of the CD is Mixed Blessings, and we will be talking about this and many other things tonight. We're very excited. A lot of things are happening. The electronics are jumping all over the place. And so much so that my co-host, Jarrah, has decided to relinquish her seat and give it to our new co-host, Darinka Blagaj. Welcome to the show, Darinka.
Can I just say Darinka?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Darinka.
It's my hardest thing. It's the hardest thing being in Canada. I feel like I just got here.
Welcome. You've just come off the boat.
Welcome. Welcome to Canada.
We're all here. You know, what's different tonight is that we don't have a bunch of different phone lines calling in our guests because everybody is here. And Darinka, why are you here? Well, you know, you introduced me to Jenny. I was able to go to her concert recently. And what a concert that was, a live performance that was just beautiful,
awesome.
Filled with energy,
awesome.
Touched my heart. I mean, I had a wonderful evening.
The energy has gone from that night and extended itself further and further, because after that night, so many changes have happened.
Yay!
So many changes to so many people, both men and women. It rayed out.
I take no responsibility for any of it.
No.
Yeah.
That's what music does, right?
Gives you the ability to respond.
Yeah.
Music is a wonderful way of communicating with people. And Jenny, you mentioned, I think it's a quote that believe that the creative expression is as much a spiritual journey as it is a musical or a theatrical one?
I do feel that they are, I mean, really it's the same for me. I was really lucky growing up because both my biological parents were very creatively expressive, and so I grew up, that was just part of the household thing, and then my foster parents were also the same, and my foster father, when I left high school and I left his house, he says, whatever you do, just live your life creatively, because as long as you're connected to being creative, then no matter what you're doing, you will be doing it joyously, and you will be engaging in full living, and you will do it with the full heart of your being. And it was the best thing that anybody could have ever said to me, because all those days you end up making muffins being a waitress or a bookkeeper or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you do it creatively, you can bring a joy and fulfillment to what it is that you're doing, because you channel that energy through you, and parenting is the same thing as we were talking earlier. Like, parenting to me is just a different creative expression. So I didn't stop singing, I didn't stop being creative when I became a parent. I became, thank you.
we're getting fanned here by Sarah.
It's been blowing by here during this very warm.
The creative spark is always, always, always there. And you've recently released a new CD, Mixed Blessings. It's been, almost 7-8 years since the last CD, which was entitled...
Thirst.
Yes. And the one before that was...
The one before that was called Blue Voice, New Voice, and I named it that because it was primarily doing a lot of blues style, but I wanted to do it in a new way, because I felt that, I mean, there's actually quite an extensive history of blues music also being generated from the Native community, and if you look at the similarities in the music and the similarities of the history and the genocide and all of those things, I wanted to maybe suggest that I was doing blues music, but from a perspective that nobody ever really thought of before, or a connection that nobody really thought of before. This last one's been a long time coming, for sure. But I did it because I needed to do it for myself. I had to fall back in love with music, and I needed to go and create from a place that was not industry driven at all. It just needed to completely come from I wanted the album to have nothing to do with, the industry and the touring circuit and all of that sort of thing. So it was the best thing that I could have done for myself.
Yeah, and everyone who's listening tonight, you're hopefully will be hearing a number of the songs from that CD, including the welcome song that was the introduction. And we'll be hearing another one at the break in about 25 minutes, who knows. And it'll be called Stolen, and we'll also have another song, Bigger Than All of Us.
Yes.
Now, it's really interesting, I can really understand when family comes into things, how the career or what you're doing changes. And when you're coming back to it again, I found for myself, I was away from music for a while. I had three kids. I did some music, but it really wasn't happening in any big way. And I felt very frustrated at times. What got me back in again? My friend Jerry and I used to go out to the park and start drumming and toning. And then we got with other friends and we began to do that. And that's how I met Darinka eventually. And we've had many powwows together, many get-togethers, many expressive kind of, you name it, we were doing it. And that brought me back again to the music in any form. And it was really interesting because it was from that, just the drums. the drums, right. Just the sound of the voice. And that's what you're doing now, and we got to hear that at the concert. It's very powerful.
I think the main thing for me was that the hand drum, especially from a, in Canada it would be First Nations perspective, and in the U.S. it would be American Indian or Native American, but from a traditional perspective, the drum is, and for some, the traditional drum is not an instrument that the women play, and the history of that is that the women gave the drum, well, the drum was given to the men because the men needed the drum. But in Canada, what we do find here, especially in Ojibwe and some Cree territory, is that the women, because there has been an imbalance for a while, and coming back to finding a balance, the women are picking the drum up again. For me, the drum is the thing that connects me to the earth, and the drum came from the earth in the first place. And one of the elders that I used to work with talked about the drum that he remembers growing up with, and in fact what they did was the elders would dig a hole in the ground, and then they would stretch the skin over top of the hole in the ground, and that's the drum that they would play. So the sound would come from the earth, and in fact what he was talking about was the sound of the skin, or the sound of the drum, would reach down into the earth, and then the sound would come back. So the drums actually really, initially, some of them did come from the earth, and that's where I go to collect a lot of my music. That's the direction that I take my feet, firmly planted on the earth in a lot of ways, and that's where I get my energy from. So I needed to get back to the drum in order to fall back in love with music.
Yeah, no, I can really understand that. Do you have any questions during this?
Because you're excited from spirit.
Well, actually, Jared's been going under the pseudonym on the internet and through her email as Drum Spirit.
Well, it's so brilliant. The minute I got his email, it's already there. They're there. Oh, wow. Okay, that's great. I was so excited, we have such a deep heart connection, and it's been such a long time. And there's a loving part of it is that my son, Emily, and his daughter, Vera, have some, they know each other. Emily was quite small. Vera was about 9.
Zara,
sorry. What am I saying Vera for? Zara, she was about 9.
About 8 maybe. It's very, because a very interesting thing happened. We, the very first Layla that we attended, I brought my son and my daughter, and we pitched a tent. I'd gotten to know David and Drink a little bit. I remember the first time I walked into your house, I came to see David, and Drink just came out to me and said, "Oh, hi, welcome." Like I was an old friend right off the bat. And anyway, we pitched our tent. We were looking forward to doing all kinds of very interesting events. I was put in charge. I was the facilitator for the children's program. And
Creation of Drumming?
Oh, no, there was that too. But at that time, it was the children's program. And we had, my daughter had what was known as child rheumatoid arthritis. And during that weekend, she got all the symptoms that took her to the hospital about a year ago. And during that time, she couldn't even walk. I had to carry her around. Drink had informed me that she was in a lot of pain and was working with the healing throughout the whole weekend. By the last day of that weekend, my daughter Zara was completely healed 100%. And I had a hard time letting the doctors, professionals, my wife at the time, to say that this healing had actually occurred. and that no other drugs needed to be used because it was complete. Those are the kinds of things that can happen at a festival like this. And I'm sure there were many more. That was my own personal connection there. We were talking earlier, Drake, about family and what that means. We had a wonderful conversation this afternoon earlier on. Family makes such a difference. And that's why I keep on coming up again, because in our search, artistically, spiritually, something comes into our lives, which is children. And they teach us so many things.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. Well, if you're open to being taught,
yes.
I don't think you have to be too aware. I've seen it done in every way possible.
Well, I think those who are receptive to and willing to engage in the parenting experience are taught. You know, unfortunately, in our society, there are situations where, those little amazing beings hold up a mirror in front of you, and unless you're willing to look in the mirror, then you have to be willing to look in the mirror to get the gift back, right? The gift that those kids will teach you. But I just want to jump in here because, you know, one of the things that I've tried to work as much as I possibly can around a lot of the elders from the communities that I am connected to them. When I listen to them speak about how parenting or community used to be, one of the things that also struck me was the realization that there didn't used to be, from what I can gather, in most places around the world, but I speak only from like a native perspective because that's my background, but there didn't used to be a separation between creative expression and everyday living. The creative expression was part of what you did when you got up in the morning. When you got up in the morning, you sang. When you were able to bring home meat for the family, you sang or you danced or you drummed or you... And you made clothes, and the beadwork and the design and the baskets and all of that stuff was all for your ability to survive. And then somewhere along the line, there was a separation between creativity or creative expression and just sort of the everyday part of living. And I feel that that's what separated us and also separated families then, or the idea that you couldn't be creatively expressive if you were all, then you had to stop something in order to raise a family. But I look back on those, my great-great-grandparents, they wouldn't have stopped being creatively expressive to raise their family. It would have, in fact, probably been more fully engaged in creative expression because there's more people to feed and more people to clothe. So in fact, having a family kind of heightens your creative expression. And it's just been separated, and now we have to find a way of getting back to honoring the fact that being a parent is a highly creative experience. And what you put into parenting is highly creative, so it may feel that you've stopped a certain thing, but you've kind of just altered the radio frequency from going out to do concerts to playing with Lego on the living room floor. But I feel that it is that separation that that we're getting back to reconnecting, which is really, really important. Finding a way back, that's the tough part.
Or the easy part?
Well, I think easy maybe, it's just not as respected out in society, and that case also makes it hard. Because if you try to recognize that for yourself, those you work with or surround you with, or those out there may not attracts that the same as you have to find it yourself. Right? And that's what makes it challenging, to remain connected to yourself while all others suggest it.
And sometimes it looks too. You know, that connection will happen, and then it's going for a loop, and then it'll happen again. It's almost like the situation is changing the way the vortex is working. You know, we're working energy in such a different way. We haven't encountered it like this before. I didn't used to be able to think and have it happen right away, you know, in a completely natural, flowing way. Just everything's smooth, you know, and a whole other level of expressing myself. It's creativity, I agree. It's not something that can even be given away. It's impossible. There's no give and take in it. It's just a beingness of energy. That even though what's going on right now, it seems to be in some crazy way against the thing tonight. You know, we went up to the CN Tower, especially on Friday, and we watched Toronto. And so she took pictures, and I took pictures, and we took pictures of interesting things. She took a picture just way out to this part of the city, you know? And I went, oh yeah, I used to live there, right? Oh. That's where I go to Goddardsville. And that's whose birthday party this night at the Moon Dancer. So she and woman Leah Saloma started Goddardsville. We were doing this little gathering where they were singing, holding a circle. You know, it's beautiful. It's a little bit awkward. I'm driving across town to make a circle happen, but I wish it was happening in my neighborhood as well. Right. In the ravine, it's all of us, you know, getting together, making the sound with drums and playing and humming and singing with each other. So yeah, I'm hoping that coming back to Toronto after 5 years hiatus in the country, a little bit more, you know, fun.
It's another thing that you work with a lot, or have been throughout your life, is the theater.
Yeah, I've been really fortunate. Well, you know, I had this epiphany when I was 7.
Me too.
I think, you know, where should I start? It's all related. I'll get there.
Yeah, it is.
Just waiting for the right sequence of events here to appear. I think, you know, growing up in the 60s, the late 50s and the early 60s, as a Métis woman, which is the means someone who's native and of European descent, but being quite brown when I was a kid was a bit complex, especially on the playgrounds, and, you know, kids are sometimes a bit ruthless in fulfilling their parent belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bit rough when I was growing up, but I convinced my mom that I had to go to this creative movement workshop, and it happened on Saturdays at the local little school that I attended, and suddenly, you know, she had one of those little tiny portable record players, and put on 45s, and we would do these movement improvs. And there was something about being in that environment that was, A, safe, and also allowed me the opportunity to be who I was to the core of my being, and not being in an environment where anybody could be judgmental. I realized that the stage was a very safe place to be. And we did this improv where I was, we were supposed to be chickens, little chicks hatching from an egg, and I just remember sort of pecking my way out to the top of the egg, and I came out, and I went, yeah, like, this is it, you know, this is a safe place to be, like, you can be who you are, and it's safe. Now, I can't necessarily say that it's whole, because you know, the best case scenario is that you can connect to your core being as you're walking down the street, as opposed to always having to be out on stage. But it was a great way for me to eventually get there. But theater is also an incredible tool, and it's a great healing tool, and it's a great, both personally and by, you know, using theater as a way of telling stories that need to be told. I feel really fortunate to have the skill set to be able to not only create my own work and tell my own stories, but to really allow my body to be a conduit for the expression of, in a form of creative expression that helps to stay in an environment that helps to tell stories that make people. I'm really blessed
to have this show. Yeah, in theater you get to create the environment that you're in. And you're working with a group called the Turtle Gal Performance Ensemble.
Yes.
And you're doing some things with them upcoming in April, aren't you?
We're constantly working,
yeah,
for sure. We did a national tour of a show that we co-wrote called The Scrubbing Project. We did a national tour last year, national being Canada.
Right, right.
The Scrubbing Project was a show that was that started because all of us growing up had stories, personal stories, of trying to scrub off the color of our skin. And we wanted to have an opportunity to say those things, but then also investigate the circumstances of what made us feel that we needed to do that in the first place. It was an incredible experience. We took the show to reserves mainly, and it was just such a profound experience to have people come up to us and say, you know, that was my life and nobody's ever said that out loud. it was great. So we did that. We're also working on another show called The Only Good Indian, which we will produce in the fall of this year, and then hopefully tour, and hopefully tour back down to California. We wanted to investigate Native performers at the turn of the century, and much to our amazement, we discovered that there were thousands of Native performers who were everything from virtuosos of violin players to mezzo-soprano singers to trombone players. And it all started, really, with the Wild West Show, which again made us realize that it was a safe place to be an Indian on the stage, where you couldn't be an Indian on the reserve. You weren't allowed to wear your regalia anywhere than the Wild West Show or in Hollywood. So it was an interesting concept. And then in April, we'll be touring a show called The Triple Truth, which is the history. We were commissioned to do a show by Mayworks Festival, which is the festival of art, person's art. And The Triple Truth is a show that we wrote that looks at the history of the word work, which is what we were talking about with Dara earlier, which is what sparked my thought about that, because they wanted us to write a show about Aboriginal people in the labor movement and the unions, and we came back and said, well, you know, if you would like us to look at what we would prefer to do is to look at how Aboriginal people, what the word work means to us, but in three different areas. One is pre-contact, which would have been before the welcome song.
Yeah, right.
The welcome song would have been sung as the Europeans arrived. And then sort of that, what we call the breakdown period, which was the whole residential school system and forced labor and slavery movement, and then current day, which is our own healing and our own community healing and individual healing, which the women are doing an amazing job at, and hopefully then our return to economic stability and survival as a human race.
Yeah.
We need to work together on that.
So the Triple Truth is really a history of work and what it really means to us. And again, you know, separation. There was a separation at some point about work being a spiritual, daily, creative expression. And then it became work in the industrial era. And now we're trying to find our way back to connecting all of those things together and retying them, like retying the knot so that it's all part of a living experience. So it's fun to do that show too, because it kind of turns history on the side and you say some things that we haven't had a chance.
You can show me up at any time. This is what we want to hear. This gives us a chance to communicate the things that we really want to say. And through theater, quite often, as you say, it's in a sense a safe place, but you can get to do things that normally you can't bring into everyday life sometimes. You know, it's just this, you know, people just talk about hockey or about sports or about, you know, not just stuff. But they don't really want to talk about things that are really important to them because they'll just be laughed at or, you know, not be one of the group. What's happening these days, though, is that the truth of who we are and what we can offer to each other is truly the gift. And there is so much in the Aboriginal way of life, and so many teachings that come through in that. They're tremendous for all of us, and we need to know them, and in a sense, incorporate that into our lives. There are gifts that every individual has. Some things are forgotten, but I think through these events, Johnny has sung on stages all over Canada. She's been nominated for a Juno 3 times for her previous work. You've also were nominated for a DORA Award.
Which is a local Toronto, Ontario, Toronto acting award. So you're 3 times nominated.
No.
Good to be nominated.
Yeah.
That's always funny. That's what everybody says. But it's great. I mean, for me, I think the nominations have been, they've all been amazing roles for me. Like, the nominations came from amazing roles. I played the role of Raven in a play called Whale, which was, basically the play was about the universal effort to save 3 gray whales. It was in the 60s in Alaska. There were 3 gray whales that were trapped in the ice, and the world came together to help save these whales, which to me is a really good example of, gee, you know, we can work together. You know, Russia came with their ice bracers, the U.S. came, the local Inuit people up in that area came out in droves, the non-Aboriginal people came out to help. Like, it was just an amazing rescue effort. And so the play was written about it, and I played Raven, which was an amazing role because Raven is a trickster or a trickster figure, a spiritual teacher. And it was a masked character, so I had no voice whatsoever.
Wow.
I just had my body and the mask, and it was such an amazing experience to crawl inside that energy every night. So to be recognized for that kind of work is really astonishing because, you know, mask work isn't necessarily considered to be, on some level, legitimate theater, so that was great. And then the other one came from playing Shylock, which is also a very interesting experience. Not only as a woman, but also from my perspective as an Aboriginal person, and the histories being somewhat similar. So it's great to be able to be recognized for the work that I'm doing, even though people may not recognize how I'm
approaching the work and what I'm bringing to it, they're feeling the effect on the other side of it, which is really the goal for me.
It certainly is. And I would like everybody to know that you're listening to Dream Path on BBS Radio, BBS Late Night Talk Radio. And our guest this evening is Jenny Lauzon. And we're coming up to about halfway point in our show. And we'd love to play another one of her songs from her CD, Mixed Blessings. And the title of this song is Stolen. And Michelle, if you're ready to cue that up, you can go ahead and start playing. Welcome back to Dream Pass on BBS Radio, BBS Late Night Talk Radio. This is your host, DJ, and we're speaking this evening with our guest. You just heard a wonderful song, a beautiful song called Stolen. It tells the story, I'm sure. And our guest tonight is Jani Lauzon, and my co-host is Darinka. And before we get to a little bit more information on some of the, you know, what's actually happening in the music, Darinka, you have a few tidbits of information for us this evening.
I do. Years ago, I went to the Anasazi lands with my husband David and our friend Michael Moon. We're always surrounded with these Moon people. And we found the most beautiful encounters. They were not there physically, and they are not there physically, obviously, but they're there. These beings that can still live in another dimension, that they can touch us who are in this dimension so easily. People, you know, scientists, and there's one that I met at the Omega in Upper New York State, the retreat site, and he was this guy who had been sitting there waiting for a vortex, a scientist, for a number of years. And now, because he did see things go in and out a number of times that can't be discounted, he, of course, wrote a book and everything, and NASA denies it, but, you know, they're there. All the time. Anyway, if you're at all wanting to go to the desert, this feels like such a beautiful time to pay tribute to the homage of that passionate, deep love of the oceans that used to be.
Oh, the oceans that used to be. Wow, what got you involved in that? I mean,
well, when we were there, it was apparent that the whole place was an ocean. It's a seabed. You find sea creatures.
Mm.
You can look in the sand and find little shells and invertebrate kind of creatures. It's so sweet, and it's red soil. And
like PEI.
Yeah, like PEI.
Prince Edward Island. Oh,
hello.
Edward Island.
Hello, Dennis.
Yes.
Yes, this
hello.
Is Denise. Hello.
Oh,
how
hi.
Are you? Hi, how are you?
We have a... Is that correct? Hello?
Congrats. Hello.
Oh, good. Yeah, yes. We can hear you pretty good. Go
okay.
ahead.
Yeah, I have a few questions for your guest.
Good.
I'd like to... Hello?
Go ahead.
Hello? Yeah, I have a few questions for your guest. I like the piece that you just played, Stolen, and what I can hear from the instruments are the bass, cello, the piano, and the flute. Is it a tin flute?
The flute is a native flute. It's a traditional flute. It's in the native community, the traditional flute in some areas would have been used for according instruments. The men would play to courts the women. And in other nations, or in the states known as tribes, it would have been a ceremonial instrument and used in ceremony. The instrument that I have is made by a flute maker in Colorado. It's cherry wood, and it's made in a traditional way so that the wood is blessed and prayed on before it's made. The only difference between a real traditional flute and the one that I have is that the flute maker, Chris Kum, what he does is he takes the Western scale and concert pitch and actually makes his flutes to a concert pitch, which would not necessarily have happened in a traditional native flute. The other instruments in the piece are actually just bass and piano and flute, and that's, in fact, all that's really there.
Oh, yes, that's what I heard.
Yep. Sorry,
yes.
I heard you wrong, but yeah, that's what's there, yep.
Yes, and what nation are you?
I am Métis. My father was Ojibwe Cree and also French. And my mother was Scandinavian. Her ancestry came from Finland and Sweden, although I know very little about that family.
Uh-huh. And where were you born?
I was actually born in Kimberley, British Columbia, in Canada. And I lived in Cranbrook until I graduated from high school. I moved in with foster parents when my mother passed away. And I left Cranbrook when I graduated from high school. And I thumbed across the United States and went to clown school in Maine. And then the journey from there has been incredibly exciting. But I've been mainly on the east coast of Canada, or the eastern part of Canada ever since.
Yes. Is that where you live now?
I live in Toronto, and I've been here for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. They all blend into each other after a while. And I, actually earlier we were all talking about how, because I grew up in the mountains, I was nurtured by the mountains and the land when I was growing up, and I do miss that part of my daily environment. But as an actor and as a musician, it is a community-based creative expression, so I find that living in an urban center is really necessary for me in order to do what I do. Although I sure would like to be back in the mountains, I'll tell you.
Have you visited back west since you moved here?
You know, I've been really blessed because I tour with my theater company a lot, and there was a period of about 6 years where a Native woman named Sadie Buck had helped to create a program at the Banff Center called Native Women's Voices, Native Women's Voices, and she was amazing, and she was able to gather many Native women from many nations across what we call Turtle Island, which would really be anything from Nunavut down to Mexico. And we, in fact, at one point created a CD. So I used the time when I was in Banff to also visit Cranbrook, and my foster father is still alive, and one of my sisters from my biological family still lives in the area. So I did for a while get back quite regularly, but it's been a bit more difficult to get there in the last few years. Although I went home a couple of years ago to play Aldonza in Man of La Mancha at the local theater company, which my foster father actually runs. It was fabulous.
Oh,
it was great.
That's great. And the piece you just played, Stolen, what I liked about it is how the flute sounded like the call of a loon.
It was, what I was trying to create there was actually, and to the best of my ability on a Native flute, the sound of the eagle, because the eagle in a lot of our nations is, and why the eagle feather is so important in ceremony is that the eagle is the messenger, I guess, or the way that we can talk to the Creator, and sometimes our messages are brought to the Creator through the eagle and vice versa. So I wanted to, and in the song I was hoping that all of those children who experienced the residential school system had hope, or were able to remain hopeful if they heard the cry of the eagle. So that was what that sound was. The bird in the song is a message and hope. Yes.
Well, I guess to me it sounded like a loon because I've never heard an eagle, but I don't know if you meant the flute to sound like an eagle or just to have the spirit of an eagle.
I think the spirit of an eagle, because the eagle is actually got a very high pitch, almost whistle kind of sound. And we don't hear it a lot anymore, although we probably would have many, many years ago when eagles were more abundant. But it's almost like a whistle in a way. So it's a bit difficult to replicate exactly on the instrument, which is why I would suggest it's more the spirit of the bird call. But I do understand what you mean. It does the traditional flute does lend itself more to a loon type call, and that's such a beautiful, amazing being as well, the loon. It's very a lot of ways to the eagle.
Uh-huh. And are you the one who was playing the flute?
Yes. Yes, I was. Yeah. And
uh-huh.
The melody for the song also is the song is also my composition, and I wrote it in honor of my father who did in fact go through the residential school system and a very difficult time for many Aboriginal children who are now my age and older. A difficult time in our history, too, in terms of relationships between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in this country. And hopefully we're getting to a healing place in that history.
Well, this is the first time I've been exposed to your music. You're a writer. Are you also a singer?
I am, yes. My first two albums were actually way more vocally based, and there is, on Mixed Blessings, which is this new album, a lot of, I call it hand drum and flute songs because the compositions are, or the songs are, a lot of women singing together with the hand drum or me playing my flute. So there is a nice blend of both. And when you're an artist in today's world, it's good to be, to have sort of a lot of cross-disciplinary skills. So I'm able to use my voice in a lot of different ways. And I feel very fortunate for that. So I can use it for myself and for my own healing, and I can also sing musical theater if I have to.
Oh.
And opera.
And opera, yeah. And jazz,
oh, opera.
Another one of I think it's...
Well, I know that you're a musician and also an actor, and I know that DJ has also been an actor and he's a musician. Are there many musicians that are also actors?
You know, there are actually, and I was speaking earlier about my foster father and what a great inspiration he was to me, and I. And my biological parents as well, but I remember him, we were talking one day about creativity, and he said, you know, just think of yourself as the roots of a tree, or the creativity is like the seed of a tree, and there can be many different branches to a tree, but they all are connected to the seed that created the tree in the first place. So I'm a real tree gal, by the way. So for me, I look at all of the different ways that I creatively express myself as different branches of a tree. But they're all connected to the same source, which is
yes,
really just
me allowing...
Yes,
now I understand what you mean.
Well,
yes, because
whether I'm a
I
musician or an actor, those are just different ways of expressing myself creatively.
And I like that,
still
that analogy, because I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said that either being an actor or being a musician or puppeteering, which is also something I do, are just different branches of the same tree, but they all come from me.
Yes, and that's what... Yes.
Sorry.
And what I'm trying to say is I like the analogy of a tree, and the tree comes from a seed, and there are different branches. Because now I understand, because I am a writer and I love to dance.
Right.
So maybe I've combined those two together.
Yeah, and we were also talking earlier about, and this is only from my perspective, really, but I do feel that, well, especially in the Native community, there wouldn't have been a long time ago, there wasn't a separation between disciplines. Like, you sang while you danced, and you danced while you sang, and you beaded while you sang, and you created moccasins while you sang, and you, you know, like, there wasn't a separation, and it wasn't like you couldn't be one without the other. I think the separation came when we tried to just put everything into nice, neat little boxes. But really, for me, when I create theater, I have to put it in my body, and when I write songs, I have to do the same, and vice versa. And I love the fact that they're connected, and I think it makes, like, my music makes me a better actor, and my acting makes me a better singer, and I love how they're all connected, and it is such a great discovery when they do come, when you can find those connections, because I think the movement and the dancing will also probably make you a better writer.
That's possible. There's a rhythm there. I understand that. And I have a question about the Aboriginal artist community, or specifically the music community. Is there such a thing in Toronto?
There is a huge Aboriginal music community. I would say not only in Toronto, but also across Turtle Island. And because we don't really recognize the border, per se, we are a bigger web and very much connected. And the interesting thing about the Aboriginal music community is that it also spans musical disciplines. So in any one given night, if we all get together, you'll hear a young rapper, a traditional flute player, a men's drum group around the grandfather drum, and perhaps maybe, you know, a young singer or even an older singer-songwriter with a guitar. So we're not so concerned about styles of music, but that we are all speaking the same issues.
Thank you very much, caller. Thank you.
Can I ask another question? Okay, thank
you.
Bye.
We've got one short one.
Okay. Do you know Eugene Boyer, who is a Métis Ojibwe jazz artist?
I do, actually. I know of him. I've never met him, but I know of him. And
he's my cousin.
Oh, is he really? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
By marriage.
It is
a small world.
It is all connected.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much,
okay,
caller.
Thanks.
Thank you for calling
okay,
in.
Bye-bye.
You know, she brought up a question about is there much happening here in the community? Is this the Aboriginal radio station? It's huge here. I mean, I have it permanently on my radio signal. I just punch the key because half the time radio doesn't play anything that I like to listen to. And the originality and first. All kinds of music that comes through, and it's fresh, it's new, and it's growing. And you've been a big part of that as well. And you were, I understand, the first person. I forget the key number for the channel number or whatever.
Oh, it's Aboriginal Voices Radio, and it was started. Or the brainchild behind that was Gary Farma, who is also an actor.
Wow, good.
Because Gary understands the power of radio, and because radio is such an amazing medium, and especially in the Aboriginal communities, because, you know, there still are a lot of Aboriginal communities that don't have television or internet or whatever, and so radio is the medium of communication. Or as we go into the internet as a possible communication tool. Radio is still the link to communicate us. And Gary is an incredible visionary, and he understood that. And so Aboriginal Voices Radio is broadcast out of Toronto, but is broadcast over the internet. And really, the goal is to bring Aboriginal people together so that we can heal together, because we have to, and we can, And the great thing about the Aboriginal music movement is that it's not industry-driven. We kind of all know that we'll never be played on... There's not a big chance it will be played on commercial radio. So we're not concerned about trying to fit ourselves into those molds and structures. And I think the freshness that you talk about comes from the fact that we're just more interested in creating and expressing ourselves and telling the stories that we need to tell and not being censored by industry standards. And that's where I think the freshness comes from, because we're just doing anything we feel like and all is possible.
Yeah, that certainly comes through. And I know when I was attending your recent concert, you did a variety of music, I think, probably from the beginning right up until this point in time. And there was one song, I mean, to me it's a hit, 99 Pounds of Natural Born Woman. Is it? I mean, I certainly recognize that song right off the bat. So, and there are other songs, or other artists on there, having listened to it, it does sound like it definitely can be music that could be heard by many people right across the world, and they would love it. And so we're hoping that this will get out to more and more people. This is one way of doing it as well here on BBS Radio. And I have to tell everybody that if you want to get in contact with Jenny, you can reach her at her site, www.jannylauzon.com. And that's spelled JANILAUZON.com. And if you go to her site, it'll lead you to other areas as well, because I understand you have another site that actually distributes your independent CDs.
If you do go to my site, you can get to IndiePool, which is an online distribution company that... thousands of independent musicians use as a way to distribute music, and they've been fabulous because they really are about supporting independent musicians. And I think their website is www.indiepool.com, my site links you directly to the portion of their website that would give you the ability to order my albums online, and also, you know, hundreds and thousands of other interesting musicians as well. But I, you know, the internet and, you know, these are the ways that we're now connecting with each other. And we're rebuilding communities in a new way, which I find quite fascinating, because, you were talking about that. Darinka was talking about that when she first arrived. We were talking about like communities gathering and creating communities, and then earlier DJ and Dara and I were talking about communities. Well, through the festivals that you've organized. I mean, that's how we're rebuilding communities in a new, different way, and we're using radio and the internet and do that, which I find incredibly fascinating.
Yeah, it is, and that's certainly been our experience as well. So definitely anyone who's, because we still have another song to go, if you'd like to look into the music that Jenny is doing, please do so. If you ever get a chance to see her in concert, go. It is life-changing. You come out of the concert feeling like a brand new person. She puts so much energy, so much love. You had a smile on your face the whole time, I think. But the variety of music is really the way you sing. Like you mentioned jazz earlier, and this is where you can. I mean, all kinds of music is good, but when you get into jazz, it seems like there's something that happens to you, and you just let go when you start to sing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so interesting about, you know, about that kind of music, because it's free-flowing. Myself, I just love music that is almost improv-like, that sort of comes from you at the moment. You're taking a few chances, but at the same time, when it hits, when it grabs that moment, just at that moment, then it's almost like free sailing. And you can really feel that from the artist. So when you're doing that, the audience is experiencing that. So that's why I'm saying you got to come and see her live. I mean, of course, CDs are great, but there's nothing, absolutely nothing like a live performance.
I would agree for me that, I mean, I love being in the studio. I think it's great to, you know, to record. But the live, but singing live and creating music live is just the best for me. Like, it's the most amazing experience. And I would say the same for being an art, like a theater artist as well. So how do you deal with painting, Danica? I mean, that's a very, I mean, I've never had an opportunity to ask a painter this, but how does that translate to a live experience in a way, or does it?
It totally does. It's exactly the same. But there's nobody else there.
Yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
So you're having a
so
live
years
experience.
Years and
creating.
Years of, yeah, sometimes recreating. Sometimes I went somewhere, like the water goddess painting. You know, I went to Honduras. I swam out into the water. I was on this little island, and I thought, oh, wow, what a cool reef. Keep going, keep going. And suddenly everything went blue everywhere. The reef disappeared. I thought, oh, my God, what happened? And then I was completely made in the presence of the water goddess. This is water. You know, that deep reverence. And then I sort of poked my head up and put up my goggles and tried to figure out where I was, like, what happened?
Wow.
You know, and then I looked and I saw, oh, there's a shore behind me, nothing in front of me but ocean. Oh, what happened? And there's a wall, a 200-foot drop cliff. And so that moment, just when I entered into that space with her, I took that moment and I brought it into the painting. And what came out of the painting was I couldn't recognize, just like sometimes with some kind of music, you can't recognize. You're not there yet. So the painting is in motion, creation.
Mm.
Like every other art form that passionately brings up the essence of now. And so there it is. And those are the paintings that make sense. And that particular one, I did not delineate form to my knowledge. And many times I don't actually have a clue what's coming, or that I've actually delineated something. So sometimes much later. And I was on the phone with somebody in my studio. I had this big studio, and suddenly her face appeared. And her face was right there in the painting, in the appropriate spot, because her body was already delineated, but I couldn't see that before. And her features were there, and I, without looking, I said, I walked and stared at the same spot, because if I would have missed that spot, I would have missed her. And she would have been gone, and I would have been, I don't know, on another journey with whatever else. But, you know, I stayed there, she stayed there, and I delineated all of her, and she's in the painting. And I showed this painting to a woman named Mahalani on the Big Island of Hawaii, and she is a grandmother. She's the keeper of the knowledge of the tradition. And she is a storyteller, and she knows her. She said, oh, I know her. I see her all the time. Yep, she's Pele's sister, the water goddess.
That's great.
Pele's sister, the water goddess. That is so interesting, because we are going to be talking with a young lady from Honolulu. Her name is Alice Inui. And I don't know if I got the last name right, but she channels the goddess Pele, the fire spirit.
I have a painting too.
Listen to the connections here, folks. It's all happening here right now. Wow. Yeah.
She is so, well, I don't know. It's like looking at fire in form. How do you put fire into form? Her eyes are kind of greeny. You know, her body is luminescent, like when you look at lava going down a volcano, it's not all one color. And I painted her in oil, but I was on Maui, and I didn't have a lot of time, you know, and I had to roll up these things and get going. So I cooked it in the sun. I picked this spot that was totally sheltered.
Wow.
And I just put her there on this little piece of walkway, and for 3 days I cooked 3 paintings, or 4, until they all dried. And the paint completely cured. and I was managed to take her home because I wouldn't have been able to take her, and then I went on a huge journey after that. But that whole experience of, you know, those goddesses, they just walk into pieces. Whenever they see that, you know, someone is asking or wants to connect, they'll come and they'll walk in. It's like any part of nature and any part of this oneness, you know, it walks in to all creators, you know, and so let's, you know, be co-creators and just keep that rolling and have more fun together.
You know, the more we talk about these things, the importance of letting our young ones be creating an atmosphere, an environment for them, so that they can express their creative selves. Quite often in our society today, that isn't the artistic approach, no matter what it is. This is considered kind of a secondary, tertiary, not even important anymore kind of thing. When we're beginning to find out that it's exactly these things that are probably the most important thing is being a human being, to be able to express yourself in a creative way, because it goes beyond the mind, beyond a lot of things that we modern society holds true. And science is beginning to find this out that
I'm sorry.
Well, go ahead.
I shouldn't be laughing.
Well, it is.
No, I'm not laughing at science.
No.
In
recognition?
Well, I find it, for me, the, again, I have to go back to, you know, my ancestors, we learned so much from our elders, and again, that whole idea or the realization that at one point, and probably around the world, must have been around the world, there was no separation. There was, it was, we were. The whole, our whole daily experience was all creatively expressive based. And that made us whole. It was when we started to separate all those little things and try to, and somebody, you know, usually it was not a group consensus, made decisions for us in terms of what was more important that we should learn, or what was more important that, you know, that we should focus on as a society, and you should learn these industrial skills because, you know, this is more important than culture and language. And that's when it all fell apart, because we took away the very core essence of who we were. And now we're all just hoping to get back there. So I'm not laughing at science, but I just find it kind of funny because it's like, you know, our ancestors and the people who came before us knew these things for so long and kept trying to say, but you know, now science is catching up and going, we've made these great discoveries. Yeah, but if you had listened to the elders years ago,
yeah.
You know, the story keepers, the woman who holds the knowledge knows all these things she could tell these scientists and probably has over the years. And finally, it's, you know, we're all reconnecting. But in a way, it's kind of sad, but it does make me laugh where I go, because the elders have known that for so long. And elders around the world, not just necessarily from, you know, a Native perspective.
That is so true. And more of that is being communicated. There are actually individual scientists going into communities now. I forget the exact nature of what they wanted to do, but they were actually consulting the elders on what to do. And they weren't just sort of going, oh, yeah, well, then we'll do that, and that's good. They were listening, and they actually followed. And as they were doing it step by step, they said, what would be good next? And they were actually learning a better way of doing something. And as they were doing it, they were also learning the communication was happening back and forth. It was wonderful. And as you said, I mean, it is kind of water under the bridge, but at the same time, it is so important to remember those teachings, because they spoke the truth, and they still do today.
It's frustrating to be in the not know.
In the not know. Well, we are in the in the new no, not no. We are coming quite close to the close of the show, and it has gone by. Thank you so much, Danny.
It goes by too fast.
Yeah, it has gone by very quickly. Your message has been very good. Your message that we need to be creative in all parts of our life, no matter what that is.
I make a mean cup of tea in the morning. It's very creative.
So if you want a cup of tea, you know where to go. It is...
I'm just working on getting dressed.
Yes.
Or getting dressed in the morning, yeah. We are coming to... this is DJ. The show is Dream Path. And I'm almost forgetting what I'm saying because I am having so much fun here. But we are going to listen to one more song by Jenny Lozon from her CD, Mixed Blessings. And this song is called Bigger Than All of Us. And Michelle, take it away.
Haneya, ueya, haneya, haneya, yanaya, venaya, naweya, venaya,
Oh.